This is the Applying Sports Science Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Greenwood, and it's great to have you here as part of the podcast family. Presented by the Human Performance Center as part of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis, we're here to talk about all things sport, science, and the real things that contribute to athlete success. And if you want the cheat notes, it's about more than just the science. In episode 3, we chat to elite Australian track and field athlete Henry Frayne. Henry's a long and triple jumper, a two-time Olympian, reaching the final in the long jump in both London and Rio, finishing 9th and 7th respectively. He's also a world indoor silver medalist and has a Commonwealth Games silver medal in his trophy case as well. Henry's also a thoughtful athlete, representing a passionate student of his event, and has some unique insights on science and support staff based on his own path from aspiring to successful elite athlete. As always, we'll delve into his thoughts and opinions and lessons learned about applying sports science to help us all be better at what we do and ensure we make a real difference to athletic performance. Here we go. G'day, Henry. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Dan. How are you? It's been a long time, mate.
It has been a long time. Layla was reminiscing on, actually you reminded us of coming to our engagement party and hanging out in Germany many, many years ago, and when we were all young and fresh-faced and thought we could conquer the world.
Yeah, it seems like forever ago. Yeah, back in Germany. I haven't been to Germany for, it was like 5 years now. But I'd love to go back there. Back to Rome.
Absolutely. Hanging out with, Boomba Bar, and I remember buying like $1, like bratwurst and stuff.
Yeah, I remember just smashing milk or chocolate and Biscoff. Is it Biscoff or Biscoff? Yeah. Can't remember. Buy the packet each night. Probably wasn't my finest nutritional stage of my career.
That, and we all played too many video games as well.
Yeah. Yep. Guilty.
Hen, you've had lots of support staff, lots of sports scientists come in and out of your life. Is there almost a lesson that you'd want to tell the next one that turns up to try to help?
It's a tough gig for someone trying to join my support staff at this point in my career. I feel like I'm borderline defensive of what I'd inverted commas call my inner circle. It wouldn't be for the faint-hearted. But, I think it's just about building – you've got to build a relationship. And this is going to change for every athlete, I think, depending on the stage they're at or the sport they're in, if it's team environment, individual, being from an individual sport. And that the latter part of my career, and at least thinking that I know a lot about my craft, I think there's quite a high barrier if you're going to be somebody who is offering advice to me, which I'm going to take on board. So, certainly diving in the deep end and from an authoritative perspective probably won't fly with me, and you're gonna have to build my trust. And to do that, I think that would be just particularly important to show that you putting in the time and effort to learn about long jump at this stage of my career. Triple jump previously when I was younger, showing that you know the sport that you're trying to give advice on, even if not all sports science is it's not necessary to know the sport if you're giving VO2 max or something like that, I suppose. But a lot of the stuff that I've received in terms of support from exercise science and sports science over the years has been velocities, footage to work on angles and technical components, which are then very much in the field of the coach athlete. And so if you're going to, I suppose, step into that realm, which for a lot of track and field athletes is a very tight knit relationship between the coach and the athlete, then you just can't really step in and fire from the hip. You really need to basically create value for yourself, and the starting point I think for that is definitely by not just spitting figures and actually showing that, okay, you know, this is what I know about long jump. This is, you know, what else can I learn? I want to make sure we're on the same page before, I start giving my input, basically.
And within that spiel, there's like 50 things I want to dig into. So I'm going to try to go through them because, everything a young sports scientist needs to know is buried in there, or everything even an old sports scientist like me needs to know is... So do you think you then by default were more open and more ready to hear stuff when you were younger, or do you think that same wall and barrier to sort of Henry's world was up when you were younger?
I think for me, my first coach was Eastern European and provided – it was a parent-child relationship. He had all the power. He was in control. It was this is your training. This is what we're doing today. There was no preset training program. And I trained with him from the age of 13, 14 until 19 and a half. And so for that segment of my career, had I had sports science support, which I didn't, I would have been, I think, quite receptive, as long as the coach had said, listen to these guys, or, you know, had. But having said that, I also don't think my first coach, he had such probably an ego that that I can't imagine that he ever would have taken advice from a sports scientist. But so I think what that meant for me was that by the time I was 20, I'd absorbed an absolute ton of information and probably thought I knew everything about long triple jump, and probably did know more about it than your average 20-year-old. But
I was going to say, you were always a student of the sport. You were always...
Yeah, but I don't, you know, I'm not too big of a man to say that, obviously I was young and naive and there was a lot of things that I would learn over the next decade and no doubt will learn throughout the rest of my life. So, yeah, I think from the age of 20, I definitely had a barrier up, and that's just, I think, it's inherent in my nature to somewhat want to lead rather than follow. But... yeah, as I've gone on in my career specifically, I've become, the barriers got higher, wider, whatever, less gated, however you want to put in an analogy. It's definitely got harder to gain my trust, I'd say.
Is that because people have proved that people have sort of shown up to help have not helped, or is that because...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, definitely. And not specifically sports science. I wouldn't say I've ever had an experience where, you know, I felt that someone from sports sciences, you know, in their attempt to help has somewhat sabotaged my career. It's more, you know, medical administration, that sort of situation.
Well, I think, that's a pretty real reality for an athlete that you have... over your career, no matter what stage, you have a lot of people almost, is it like nitpicking or like contributing or like sort of like all this sort of bubble of people around you. Imagine there's so many people that have come in and out of your life and sort of said that this is what you should do, or, you know, I can help you, or this is the new technology, or why aren't you doing this? I can only imagine almost how many of those sales pitches you've had over your career. And
yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, everyone, whether they set out with the intentions, they seem to say that, you know, it's they're there with your best intentions, with your best, the best outcome at heart. But I would say that I've found, obviously, you know, the world doesn't revolve around me, but at the same time, quite a lot of people that I've interacted with in high performance sport have really only been there for their own furtherance of their own career, and not really to, you know, see the best for the athlete, I suppose. You know, maybe lacked passion or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a high performance athlete, you know, needs medical of some sort, you know, and that could be, you know, any or all of massage, physio, osteo, you know, podiatry, exercise physiology, whatever. They're probably going to need a coach or a mentor. They're going to need someone to do all the technical stuff in terms of what sports science covers, you know, in varying levels, you know, depending on the event. And then they're going to need, I suppose, a family support network, something like that, you know, to deal with the psychological component of sport, or I suppose a psychologist or something like that. So, or like, everyone's going to take play a role, but I think when I was 20 to 25, I would have, or 20 to 23 probably, I would have said, you know, who's in my inner circle, you know, might have counted 10 or 12 people. And I might have quite loosely included people, whereas now it would be three or four people probably currently, because of that, yeah, trust barrier, whatever, type thing that's sort of gone on throughout my career, or got worse throughout my career.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've probably got a better bullshit meter than you used to, right, as well?
Yeah, I just think, yeah, it's, well, I suppose to be in the inner circle, you've got to be an essential service, an unreplaceable input into what I'm trying to achieve. And, yeah, I suppose... most people are replaceable. Yeah, or, you know, or as far as I'm concerned, it's not worth having a somebody just for the sake of it if they're not really good at what they do. You know, like I don't, you know, I work with sports scientists now, but I don't consider them essential currently, because I don't have that rapport. You know, there's just been a changeover here in Queensland, and yeah, I certainly don't have that rapport with the current scientists yet. So yeah,
you alluded to that, both that you need to be damn good at whatever, at the science or the support that you're providing, but also that you need to trust them, or they need to know the sport. Do you almost, would it be like 50-50 in terms of trusting someone and their, and then them having the skill set to back it up, or is it, are they almost both as essential as each other?
Well, yeah, I think, well, I mean, I think one feeds into the other. You know, if you're able, you know, in the hypothetical world, able to come to me and say, you know, I suppose you become a salesman and say, well, this is my arsenal of science that I've got available to me. You know, these are the things that might be helpful to you. You know, do you and your coach or whatever think there's any value here? Do you want me to go into more depth of what we could obtain out of, you know, doing this testing or that testing or getting this data? And then go from there, you know. And if I can see that there's, or I suppose my coach can see that there's value to the game, then that's a pretty good starting point. You know, you've got the shoe in the door. If you are a new sports scientist and you come out and you, you know, take some slow motion footage or whatever, you know, what you've been asked to do, and then you proceed to say, you're doing this or you're doing that, well, then no, you're immediately going to be pretty much blacklisted by me. In my mind, you know, I'll be civil to you, but you've lost me from the get-go, because, you know, you might actually have an amazing understanding of biomechanics, and you might have an amazing understanding of long jumping biomechanics, but if I don't know that and I don't trust you, then as far as I'm concerned, I've heard, you know, 100 other athletes and coaches and people in the stand and people on social media criticizing and giving advice, and, you know, like, if you're so good at it, then do it yourself, or, you know, show me your athlete that you've coached to, you know, to two Olympic finals, or, you know, so that's sort of the way I see it.
You allude to that idea of you're now more autonomous in your coach athlete relationship. Do you see that scientist as working with the coach for you, or with you with the coach for performance, or is it like,
I think it depends on, I think I get what you're trying to say. I think it 100% depends on the situation. I would say my situation is uncommon, let's say, just within track and field, and certainly probably in a broader sporting sense. I think working backwards, if from a team sport, or, you know, any American team sport, you know, that we've discussed or anything like that, you've got the coach is a power figure and they have control, you know, say in the NFL, the coach is the top dog, everything runs down.
Yeah. Just for those listeners, Henry's got his San Francisco 49ers shirt on at the moment. just representing.
Yeah. You know, I don't think that there's much say that a NFL footballer has in, you know, what sports science they're doing. You know, you just turn up, you do it. You know, you can probably go above and beyond if you're a really experienced and elite NFL player. But when you come to an individual sport, then I think similarly, you have, for junior athletes, the same dynamic. You tend to have a coach who has the control and the power. And then as athletes get more experienced in track and field, I feel like you learn, just because of the nature of the sport, if you do the sport for 10 years, you're going to be an extremely experienced athlete who has, you know, the capability to probably coach at a relatively good level, because you just won't survive in the sport if you don't have those characteristics. So my personal situation is one where, over the years, because of a lot of injuries and some, I suppose, peculiarities in the characteristics of me as an athlete, I've had to learn and take on a lot myself in medical, psychological, all sorts of areas of sport, technical. And so my relationship now with my coach is, I like to think it's like a partnership, as opposed to a traditional coach-athlete relationship. You know, it's one where I would say I feel like a coach is no longer essential to me, but highly valuable to me. That, you know, I think I can get on and get by and do all right without a coach, but I think I'm better off with a coach. Because, you know, I think two great minds is better than one great mind. And an athlete, a track and field athlete, carries too much of a burden, psychologically, through, you know, the ups and downs of injuries, personal life, whatever it is, financial, what it is, everything, to I don't know, steer the ship. Like,
yeah, take on all the load of possible.
You you need to be able to offload some stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, in my circumstances specifically, you know, I've got a coach with 45 years experience. I don't know, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And he's coached a lot of Olympic athletes. He's coached Olympic medalists. But, you know, in the same way we're having a pretty candid discussion now, that's what our day-to-day is. There's no power struggle or, you know, anything like that. It's just, pretty open, bouncing ideas off each other. And that's the way I like it. And, you know, there was definitely a phase in my mid to late 20s where we definitely had to adjust to get the relationship to that, because that wasn't really the traditional relationship I would say that he had with or has with most of his athletes. But, yeah, I mean, over time he sort of realized that, you know, we were doomed to fail if we didn't, you know, share some of the decision making and stuff like that. So,
and you've
what question led me down this rabbit hole, but yeah,
so get me back on track if I'm off track.
Well, look, we started with the idea of does a sports scientist sort of run through the coach?
Yeah, so we're back here. So in my circumstances, I would say the sports science mostly goes through my coach.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one area. I mean, he is somewhat of a sports scientist or an academic
himself. I was going to say, yeah.
So my situation, I mean, that's not my claim to fame. Like, you know, I've done everything in my power, studying commerce and law to stay, you know, away from sporty related stuff outside of when I'm at the track. But, I don't know. I think, to be honest, it's been a while since I had an exercise scientist, you know, to be honest, since probably Chris McCosker being after yourself were the last two people that sort of I had that extra level relationship with. So, everything these days I just let go through.
Together.
Yeah. So.
So, I mean, you mentioned Chris and I. Was there something that we did to sort of prove to you that we were there for the right reasons, or was there some knowledge that we brought, or was there some equipment that we brought that brought specific value that others haven't?
Any equipment that you guys brought has sort of been a mainstay in what we've done since then. So, I don't know the answer to that, but I think probably a significant part of yourself and Chris was just the time you were there and the you were there in a phase, I suppose, when there was sort of three or four of us athletes at a sort of elite level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then, for example, there was just a lot to be done comparing between the athletes and those scientific metrics, whether it's velocities, jump phases in triple jump, contact time, stuff like that were an easy sell for four young athletes trying to beat each other, you know? Yeah. So, you know, like it's, yeah, I mean, at this point in my career, or the last 5 years, it's sort of, or last 3 or 4 years, it's sort of sat at the top of long jump in Australia, and there's been less, I don't know, threat from within in my mm-hmm. own training squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I shifted my focus to other parts, predominantly medical
mm-hmm.
type issues, and maybe some psychology stuff to prolong my career. And I suppose learned to, well, trust that, you know, 15 years of training and the work I did in my early to mid to late 20s, basically.
Yeah.
Doesn't go away. Yeah, yeah. No, I saw enough scientific data, you know, say velocities, year in, year out, and post-injury, post-rehab, and then had so many of those injuries that it got to a point where I was like, okay, my velocity is the same. You know, like it's, I'm no longer getting a lot faster, but I'm still jumping the same distance. My contact times haven't changed for quite a long time. You know, we did a lot of work on technical things like that, you know, foot contacts.
Mm-hmm.
And, I suppose eventually everything gives you diminishing returns as you get closer to perfection. Not to say that I've perfected anything, but yeah.
But it's a pretty, yeah, there's only so many ways you can structure your run up or think about your final penultimate step or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, long jumping's not rocket science, is it, at the end of the day? Or at least you wouldn't think when you look at someone running down the runway and then jumping. There's a running and there's jumping. But yet somehow there is a lot more that goes into, you know, being a world-class long jumper. So
I'm sure there's some people that would see you as projectiles and claim that it is rocket science.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So one thing I ask guests of the pod to do is sort of give me 3 words that you associate with a good, I used to say sports scientist, but maybe support staff member. Can you think of, I guess, 3 words that would use to describe the people that have stayed in your orbit or that you've sort of, I don't want to say accepted advice from, because that sounds a bit wrong, I guess. It's almost... Let me stop rambling. What are 3 words that you use to describe, I guess, the people that...
who I valued advice from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I already touched on it, but I don't think I'll value advice if there's no trust. So I suppose, yeah, you've got to build the trust. And, you know, that can... Some people will be more trusting, some people will be less trusting, and you can build mm-hmm. that in, you know, all sorts of different ways. You don't have to wow someone with, you know, how quickly you can do the maths on contact times or whatever, or read data or something like that, but, you know, it could be anything. It might be that, though, you know. It might be how fast you can get, how efficient you are with data and stuff. So because... you know, getting data back to an athlete, like we're not scientists, so, you know, we jump on a Friday, you know, if we're not seeing the data from the competition, you know, probably the Friday or the Saturday, we're moved on
mm-hmm.
to the next comp. So, you know, the longer it takes, the less you're going to get out of it. You know, the coach and, you know, you can then obviously implement it into future competitions, training, you know. But in terms of the athlete taking on board things immediately, yeah, it needs to be quick. So, I mean, that could build you trust if that's mm-hmm. Something. But so trust, I think, would be the first thing. I suppose you produce something tangible.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, tangible and like any supports. Yeah.
You're almost getting that idea of you almost actually have to have a value. Like it's got to be more than just trusting you. Like you actually have to bring something to the table. That
yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, you got to bring something to the table and, you know, something that just isn't replaceable. Like I said before, you know, like, there needs to be something unique.
Yeah,
you differentiate yourself.
Somebody bringing you velocity data again is like, I can find 50 people that can.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're just holding the camera for me and then handing me the camera, then and that's all you're doing. Well, yeah, I mean, I can get my dad to come and do that. and all these things, are, I know it sounds like a maze to become a trusted confidant of Henry Frame because, you know, so I can't just film him. I have to bring value to him, but I can't bring value because I can't give him advice until he trusts me. But to get him to trust me, I need to bring it. You know, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, something like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I just think, that you need to bring value. And broadly, whatever support staff you are, you know, you have a set of skills that you've studied or you know, it doesn't have to be study. I suppose you could have just got it by experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think experience, some of the people I trust most have studied and are extremely bright, but I think what pulls me towards them is their experience and their trusting experience. Like funny as it sounds, like on a sports science podcast, I, you know, experience often trumps science for me. And, you know, this is one thing I think is different between Gary, my coach, and I, is he's extremely in the science camp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty heavily in the experience camp. Not to say that, like, I'm anti-science or anything, but if someone comes to me and says, you know, who I trust says this is going to fit you or this is going to help you, if I've got that relationship, I'll blindly
follow
that, you know, as long as it doesn't seem completely stupid to me, rather than, you know, despite the fact that they can't pull out a 25-page document and say, here's the proof, you know, we did a 1,000-word person study or something like that. Like, I don't need to see that if I trust you. So, getting back to it, like whatever your skill set is, you know, you got to trust that you've got it and then look within what you studied or what you're there to do and find value and just, I'm not an unreasonable person. I don't think like I'm not a, I like I'm
I was going to say, you're making yourself out. I was going to say, yeah, you are making yourself out to be a monster.
Yeah. I sound like I'm making myself out to be a monster, but, you know, like, I get along with most people that I come into contact with. But yeah, I just call a spade, I guess.
Hmm.
And I can't think of a third word for you, Dan, so just two. You're going to have to change it to two.
Dash. I do want to, you spoke about that idea of sort of when, and some other people have touched on this, that idea of when you first turn up to sort of, to your realm or to help or to be interested in the frame train, it's like don't try to tell me what to do before you've almost taken stock of what I'm already doing. Is there like how long do I have to wait kind of thing, or is there an answer to that?
Well, I think it's different depending again on the sport and the environment. You know, if you're rocking up and doing sports science and you're taking over for a team sport, I think more or less you're going to be able to roll straight in a position of authority. You know, that's what you've been hired to do. Doesn't mean you can't build relationships with the athletes, but you certainly, you know, you might not have your job for long if you don't give advice, because that's what you're employed to do. It's just in a track and field situation, it just everything's a lot harder because you're dealing with every single athlete is like the equivalent of what you'd have to do with a whole team. You've got to read that athlete. You've got to become a psychologist and basically, you know, work out what type of person this is. And with me specifically, just comes back to, if I don't feel like you know about long jump, if I don't feel you don't know about long jump, I'm not going to take specific long jump advice from you. So in that circumstance, you're really going to have to strip it back to pure science so that I feel like you're with science, which I can't dispute. You know, like your velocity, we can improve your velocity. If we could improve your velocity by 0.2 meters per second, you're going to gain 40 centimeters at takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
If you reduce your loss in velocity from 2 meters to takeoff by 0.2, then you're going that distance. No worries. Taking that on board. Okay. If you come to me and say, without building the relationship, if you lose less velocity, you're going to gain distance and the way to do it is this, you might lose me.
Those things you allude to do highlight that idea that you do need to know the sport in order to give you advice on the sport, which hopefully isn't groundbreaking news. And they don't necessarily have to be, is it safe to say they don't have to be the greatest like understander of long jump, but they have to almost, there's almost like a gate to entry to sort of like, you know, you need to be this interested in long jump and have like at least taken the time to ask some questions to show that you're interested in long jump to sort of to continue.
Well, I guess so, but also it's more, I feel like there's a bit of a blurred line there of, honestly, you could probably bring value to me quite comfortably and have absolutely no interest in long jump whatsoever. But the way that you provide the information has to stick to that. Like you can't then go and start, in inverted commas, coaching me.
Mm-hmm.
In long jump, you need to just come with pure, like, okay, you know, here's a comprehensive study on running mechanics. I've gone and, taken still shots of you running, slow motion footage of you running, and, through in discussion with the coach. And I've found all these areas, you know, all these things, and they're things that we could look at changing. No worries. Okay. When it fits in the training program, then we'll do that, as opposed to, filming something, looking at it, going, oh, your long jump's going to, you're doing this wrong. This is what you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's really delivery, I guess, is more than anything.
Yeah. You spoke to that idea earlier that even the speed of delivery is important, the closeness to competitions or performance or training. Like I think something that a lot of people don't understand is that you don't necessarily have to tell people everything that you've measured, but you do have to give numbers that actually mean something and are relevant. I think what you're getting at is something that's actually changeable rather than, like, I don't know, somebody turning up and saying you should run faster. It's like, well, yeah, I kind of got that bit already.
Yeah, like, I suppose that also comes back to, you know, do you operate through the coach or through the athlete? Probably that lends itself to operating a bit more through the coach, because in a way you are assisting the coach to coach, but you're not coaching. You know, you are taking science, and, you know, every coach is different in their level of understanding, their background, how they studied human movement or something like that, or are they just, you know, Bob's dad coached him from little A's. But you are, I suppose, part of your role is to fill the gap between potentially what the coach doesn't know. And then you've got your own set of ego and barriers to get past with a coach, you know, just like an athlete. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't have the direct relationship with the athlete, then you can go through the coach, because if they have the relationship with the athlete. But, yeah.
I see the stuff you're saying is just, it just screams really true to me about the things that people aren't taught at university about what goes into being an applied sports scientist. The things you've spoken about in terms of relationship building, showing value, you know, understanding the sport, all of those things really strike a chord with me in terms of this communication, you know, report writing, speed of turnaround of data. Like, it's all the nuances of contributing to an athletic performance rather than almost just measuring an athletic performance.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, some aspects of that are going to be in any job. You know, the more you apply yourself, the more time and effort you put in, you know, even if it seems like you're not really getting ahead, usually someone notices. And I suppose to draw it back to my studies, you know, I wonder if it's, you know, it's almost a gap that in the legal industry you have practical legal training that you have to do for 6 months to basically – yeah, bridge that gap between, you know, what you learn in a textbook to what you're actually going to be dealing with, you know, on a day by day. Not that I've done practical legal training yet myself, but that's about what I'm up to in a couple of months' time.
Is it important that somebody turns up at the track regularly, you know, watches you in the weight room, you know, understands sort of everything that goes into your day, or is somebody able to almost stay in their little bubble and almost provide help that way? Does it?
Yeah, I think it probably depends on the sport and the athlete and the situation. So, you know, some athletes won't want you around all the time. And they'll probably let you know. And at certain times of my career, that would be me for sure. Some athletes won't mind at all and would appreciate, you know, that you're taking the time to get insight into, you know, everything that they do. And that might happen organically for a sports scientist who has a particular interest, you know, above and beyond their job in sport or in the sport that they're dealing with. But I also think there's plenty of situations where, yeah, you don't have to leave your bubble, as you put it, you know, and you're purely providing scientific analysis and data. You know, you yourself have worked in multiple different sports, so I'm sure you've come across that where some sports really just want your science.
Just give me the damn number and other, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then other ones will be much more inviting, you know, into a, I suppose, like a think tank scenario of, you know, bettering athletes other than just the data that they ask you for.
Mm-hmm. So. Throughout our chat, you've alluded to that idea of the individuality of your situation, the specificity of, I guess, understanding your career and your path. I mean, this might sound just a really stupid question, but is it important to see you as a person, as Henry Frayne, more than the athlete Henry Frayne, or would you almost prefer it the other way around? That,
you know, I think they're all situational and they tie into each other a little bit. And again, it ties back to trust. So I think when you are building a relationship or when you start your job, if you, with most athletes or most human beings, probably have some level of ego. And if you take the time to, you know, learn the name, learn the what event, learn the recent history of that athlete in that event, you know, their personal best or their position or whatever, then they are going to be more forthcoming in terms of accepting you. And that, I suppose, is treating them as, or in my scenario, in my case, would be treating me as Henry Frayne, the long jumper.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you build a relationship, then I suppose, you know, you're building towards a friendship or what's something of that ilk. And then, you know, and then I become Henry Frayne, the human being, you know, just in mm-hmm. the same way that if you, you know, meet another work colleague, they are, you know, Dr. Bob, the scientist. And because I want to work with Dr. Bob, you know, I know all about, you know, I've read your books and stuff. And then, you know, you hit it off and then next minute you're working on a project together. So, you know, it's, I think it's, you know, the same way it is with anything in life. But for sure, and I think this applies across all sports, yeah, if you come in and oh, yeah, and what event do you do? You know, well... Mate, you know, get fucked.
More or less. Like, I'd rather find somebody who, you know, does a bit more due diligence to work with than that. So, yeah.
My first ever report for triathlon in Queensland, I misspelt triathlon. To say that went down well with a coach. And he looked at me, was like, there's my second report. I was like, where is that? See at the top here? I was like, what?
Oh, there's no Y in triathlon? Yeah.
But I was always trying it, yeah. And it was a triathlon. Extra A in there, and I didn't realize it was wrong. And yeah, it turns out that level of engagement with a sport is not appreciated, and it turns out you should do a little bit of homework and find out what you're wandering into before you, like you said, go in and try to tell someone how to do something, yeah, without even a basic understanding of the world they operate in, understanding the knowledge that they already have and seeing where that can help.
That's a common mistake that support people, athletes, coaches, whoever, the laypersons just observing, you know, and make and the internet makes this 100 times worse, but is, you know, you see a snapshot of something and you go, oh, he's doing that wrong. You don't know why he's doing it, or he or she's doing it wrong. You don't know, you know, what's going on in their life. You don't know anything. So don't go and give your advice, and, you know, you need to see the whole picture. And to see the whole picture, usually with, well, certainly my experience, you need to know the person, and the only way to get to really know a person and see what's behind the scene, or to see some of what's behind the scene, is to gain their trust. So, you know, it all just comes back to that, really.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really nice way to put a bow on on everything you've talked about today. I think a really nice message for everybody listening. Is there anything else you want to add before you disappear to bed and I start my day here in Memphis?
I suppose anyone listening might think that they need to go and do a dual degree in sports science and psychology now, just so that they can get a job and appease the athletes they work with. But I don't think it's just, you know, some level of common sense, or just take a moment to empathize with the person and the environment you're going into before you go into it. And I just think that will make a huge difference. And you know, if you're uncertain, ask questions, because no one's going to shoot you down for, you know, asking, you know, don't ask stupid questions. do a bit of research, but ask questions. If you're not sure about something, don't just go boldly lead with it. Just ask, you know, there's no harm that can come. And as long as you're willing to follow through with, you know, whatever feedback you get on to that question, then, you know, nothing's been lost and no relationship has been damaged.
So. Mm. Yeah, you'd almost prefer someone to, I guess it gets that thing is like, I'd almost prefer you to ask why you do something this way rather than tell you it's wrong to do it that way.
You know, it's a lot easier to systematically build the bridge than to repair it after it's damaged, you know. Mm-hmm. People don't tend to really, in high performance sport, I don't think they don't really, the first impressions are everything. They don't, the second chances are not there. So yeah, spend more time and be slightly more cautious and do your research before you dive in, and that'll serve you well, I think, from my perspective.
Because it's true, right? Like, I don't have to turn up with some new way of doing things and like wow you on day one, do I? Like, I don't have to bring in something that on day one, you're like,
you literally have from, you know, specifically sports science, you've studied a degree that you know, probably 95% of the athletes you're dealing with haven't studied. So everything you're producing is a wow if you can get the athlete to absorb it. Yeah, it's until if they don't absorb it, it's just a bunch of numbers and stuff from a guy who just suddenly started rocking up to his training sessions, you know. But you just need to find the medium to get the data and the science across. And you know, there's a reason that it's a profession, is because it's a value adding you know, area of information. So yeah, it's not really about the science, you know, you do your job well, that's one. And yeah, it's really just relationship building, which I think is really everything in life, to be honest. That really tends to be the way you move up in anything. So and I think it's more fulfilling as well. I mean, this is probably a reverse question for you, but you tell me, were you more invested when you built relationships and were invested in the athletes that you worked with than when you just spat back data to, you know, whatever other athletes or teams that you worked with?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I can do sports science. I can get the numbers that almost a traditional, or like I can do almost the basic sports science relatively straightforward. If I truly care about that person and I'm invested and I really believe in them as a human and as an athlete, I'll stay, you know, that's the one that keeps me up till 4 a.m. like looking for a different answer, or, you know, making sure that template's exactly right. You know, it's that engagement with the person makes me continue to strive as hard scientifically for them as they're striving as hard athletically for themselves, because yeah. I know they'll appreciate it and I believe in what they can ultimately become. Whereas if somebody sort of doesn't treat me as if they don't treat me as a person, why am I going to stay up till 4 a.m, you know, crunching data when I don't feel any sort of appreciation for the efforts that I put in? Why, you know, why would I choose to turn up to a late night session when I could be at home with my wife, sort of thing? So if that, as we build that relationship, I think it's reciprocal and we both grow quicker as a result and do better things together.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you want it to be a passion, not a job. And if it's just a job, then you'll do the bare minimum, because that's, you know, inherent in human nature. So mm-hmm. why would you do more than you have to if you don't have to? Mm-hmm. If you've got nothing to gain from it, then, you know, why would you? So I think that's, yeah, works. And works both ways, obviously.
Yeah, and if you're searching for that, if you truly believe in excellence, like, I think you do have to have that passion. You do have to really, really care about the world you're in. Otherwise, yeah, I think anybody can do sports science. I think it takes something different to do it to Olympic elite medal seeking levels. And I don't necessarily think it's being a better scientist. I think it's being a more invested scientist, which is all the stuff you spoke about, like the, you know, do your research, you know, read an extra paper, you know, instead of reading a novel at night, read another paper about, you know, hamstring injuries or, you know, long jump run-ups or whatever it is. Like, just keep searching for more, like have a hunger for wanting to give these people that you work with the best chance to succeed.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, just to you know, wrap up that same thing is, if I look at all the people who have substantially helped me in my career, and, you know, like I've had across, you know, medical and sports science and everything, like, you know, there would probably be, you know, 50, 100, hundreds, I don't know. There's a lot of people, but the ones that I consider to have significantly helped me, I'm still in contact with. You know, I would say I'm friends with. Mm-hmm. You know, I have them on Facebook, you know, whether it's seldom or frequently, we keep in touch. Because, yeah, that's the way I am. And, you know, that's, you know, this is my experiences. That's what we're discussing here. So, but that's just the way it is for me. You know, let there be 10, 15 people that, you know, for whatever reasons over the years, you know, moved on to different jobs, moved overseas, moved into state, or I moved or whatever it is, just different phases of life, you know, have moved on. And, but yeah, I'm still in touch with them. But then there would be, yeah, at least the same amount or, you know, many more that I'm definitely not in touch with. And, yeah, that's just, not that they're bad people, but they just never left an impression on me. So, Yeah,
it's pretty unique to be in a position where you can help someone to achieve greatness, and yeah, it shouldn't be taken for granted. I'd usually finish by saying, what advice would you give to a young sports scientist to help them grow quicker or learn? But maybe you've already done that. Is there?
Yeah, I feel like every one of my answers, but yeah, just the recap would be to take a little bit more time to learn the sport that you're working in at the beginning, particularly if you have experienced athletes, or if you're going into an environment where you're dealing with an experienced athlete, it'll get you a long way. And then just, of course, always make sure you don't cut out the coach altogether. Because that'll get you one stop to
looking for a new job. Yeah.
Oh, does that mean you want to give me a? Does that mean you want to give me one final word then for a good sports scientist? I don't even remember what your other two were.
No, neither can I. Trust and...
It was trust and sort of value add.
Value add, which is with a hyphen. Value and add separate words. They're my three words. third word. Due diligence. Two words.
Yeah.
Two words.
Yeah. I'll take due diligence. I like that one. All right, Henry. Honestly, thanks a lot for today. That was friggin' awesome. There's a lot of stuff in there that a lot of people can get from it. And I really appreciate your expertise and your experience. And
no worries. No, I was just going to say, hopefully they can, get some value out of my waffling. To waffle on and get sidetracked and forget what question was asked to me. It happens all the time when I'm getting interviewed.
Love it, Hen. Thanks a lot, mate. That was awesome. And we'll see you kick some ass on the Tokyo runways.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers. Say hi to Layla for me, and I'll chat to you soon.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Bye.
That was the third episode of the Applying Sports Science podcast. A huge thanks to Henry for his honesty, time, and experience, sharing his realities, nuances, and unwritten rules of applying science to sport. We're proudly brought to you by the Human Performance Centre as part of the College of Health Sciences at the University of Memphis. Please don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Remember to keep up to date with the Human Performance Centre on Twitter and help us keep evolving that relationship between science and sport.